Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Benjamin van den Driesch, who is the Chief Medical Officer from Bipeflies. Ben, thanks for joining me today.
Very happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Bipeflies. I don't think it's a company that's widely known. I think you have some international heritage. Tell us a little bit about the company, what it is you do, and how you arrived at this point.
Sure. So Bipeflies was founded in Belgium in 2015, but almost from the start, we've been active in the US as well. So I guess that connects to the international part of things. And our tagline is we enable wearable health. What we mean by that is that if somebody in healthcare, in the medical world or pharma has a specific problem, and let me take the example of epilepsy specifically, because that's actually one that we're currently working on. And they have a specific biomarker or clinical endpoint in mind that they want to record, or they want to have the ability to record that on a very large group of patients. Right now, it takes a lot of time, money, and expertise that they often don't have in-house to start building something like that. And so what we do is we've developed a platform that allows people to much more quickly build one of those end solutions. So that platform consists of a couple of components. We have hardware in there, obviously, because we need to be able to record data. So this hardware, in our case, we call it SensorDot. It's a small wearable device that can record a multitude of physiologic and behavioral parameters continuously. There's, of course, software involved. You know, you need a cloud infrastructure, you need to be able to shuttle the data around to all the right stakeholders, and present the information in the right format to all the right stakeholders. And then finally, and probably most importantly, you need to be able to do something with that. You need to be able to derive clinical insights from that data. So you need data science techniques and machine learning to do all that. So our platform really incorporates components for all of these different aspects that you need to build a wearable health application, not just a device. We're not a pure device company. We have brilliant hardware engineers in the company that build all this stuff, but that's only one small aspect of it. It's really about building this end-to-end solution that can scale from a small proof of concept. Let's say you want to start testing on 5 to 10 patients, but you want to be able to then grow with, let's say, a clinical development pathway, to support large-scale clinical trials as well as deployment to the market. And our platform scales with that application, making it possible to really get to such an end-to-end application.
So tell us a little bit about you and how you got here. So what's your background and how did you arrive at Bipeflies?
Sure. I would say I'm a scientist at heart. I did a PhD actually in molecular biology, but already at the time was very focused on some physiologic molecular physiology as well as aspects that have to do with systems medicine. I was focused on sepsis, which as some of the listeners may know very well, as a condition where multiple organ systems all start failing at the same time. So I did molecular work there, trying to understand the underlying pathways that lead to sepsis and septic shock. But at the same time, I was at Ghent University in Belgium, and we had access to a very large database of physiologic data that was recorded on mice, on sepsis mouse models, that was kind of just sitting there. It had been, of course, the data had been recorded for a purpose, which was to look at blood pressure trends mainly. But there was this very large and rich database of waveform data, on the level of EKG and blood pressure data.
So just sorry to interrupt, but that's really intriguing. So they were recording the physiological data on mice. So they had EKG and pulse. Wow, that's...
Yeah, that's with these very small implantable devices. So they're completely untethered. There's no wires or anything. It's completely wireless.
Right.
And so one thing led to another. It became very interesting to really start mining that data set for specific patterns that had to do with stabilization or exacerbation of sepsis. And that work led me to a postdoc in the US at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, where we basically repeated the same thing, but this time used machine learning approaches to do that on ICU data from so human patients in this case, still in sepsis. So really combining, let's say, the physiology, molecular background of our understanding of disease with more data science focused approaches of using bigger data sets to extract insights. And at the time, I got in touch with the two founders of Byteflies, who are both engineers, because they were looking for sites to test some of this some of the work they were doing with devices. And then one thing led to another, and it became very clear that really that interface of molecular physiology, medical knowledge, and combining that with engineering, data science, and machine learning approaches is obviously very interesting.
So you bring up machine learning. A lot of people talk about that. It's certainly one of the terms we talk about AI. There's a lot of, I don't want to say confusion, but certainly lack of full understanding around some of these terms. Can you explain succinctly why that was an important jump from the early work with the mouse models to the work with the ICU data? One of the points that you made was machine learning was a sort of critical inflection point. And I don't want to say incremental because it feels like it was a little bit bigger than that, but maybe it was.
In a sense, it was. And maybe as a side note, machine learning and AI is currently a term that's often blown out of proportion or hyped up. There are fantastic applications with it, but often it is misunderstood what can actually be done with it or what the term actually means. And if you go back a little bit in time, you know, people have been using algorithms for a long time. Maybe it's better to just, you know, talk about algorithms that get to a conclusion or that can derive a certain insight from a data set as opposed to machine learning. But to come back to the point there, that specific set of tools, in this case machine learning tools, really allowed us to go from, let's say, more heuristic approaches where you need to derive certain insights in a fairly manual way from data, which at the time with the mouse data was still possible because the data set was fairly small, to a much larger database that is, let's say, much more messy in the sense that this was data coming in from the ICU where you have people with very widely ranging conditions and issues, making the data set more complex. So in order to mine that for similar features, we could have started from that same rule set and tried to make it adopted to that data set, but that would have taken a lot of time and a lot of manual work, which we were able to circumvent by using machine learning.
Fantastic. So I agree with you. I mean, I think this challenge of this terminology, and it reminds me a lot of ASPs and clouds. We talked about ASPs in the old days, and then, you know, it moved to the cloud. Very much the case with this data, but clearly that was a sort of inflection point. So you saw this insight, you got more in the way of data coming from the ICU. What was the next phase of innovation that took place? You joined forces with the folks from Byteflies. What's happening now?
So now we're really at a point where we have, first of all, the ability to get to the data. It's unfortunately a relatively boring problem, but nevertheless a very important one to tackle. Initially, we actually started off with the idea of, at the very least, using some existing devices already on the market to get to the data streams that we needed. But it very quickly became clear that that was a very difficult approach, because in many cases those devices are either very expensive or difficult to get to. They sometimes smaller companies go out of business or no longer support it. Very often, unfortunately, there's this black box aspect to them, where the data that you can actually derive from these devices has already been processed in a certain way, and it's not disclosed how it is processed, which can be a big issue. So an approach like that is it's cumbersome and messy, and because of that, the decision was made to build our own hardware. And considering the hardware background of the two founders, that went relatively smoothly. And really now we're at a point where we have that hardware and we have the ability to collect a very large collection of physiologic and behavioral signals, you know, going from EKG to PPG, so blood pulse flow, to respiration, to brain activity through EEG, of course, activity measures, electrodermal activity, a whole host of things. So we really can collect very deep multimodal and continuous physiologic profiles on test subjects. And so what we're doing with that now, and I mentioned it briefly in the beginning of the interview, is that currently we are focusing on doing that in the epilepsy space, where we have a device that goes behind the ears and that can continuously record EEG, so a couple of channels of brain activity, heart rate through PPG, and activity, which allows us to basically replace, at the very least, replace seizure diaries. Currently, people with epilepsy are often asked to keep a diary of when a seizure happens. But these are known to be very inaccurate. It's a hassle for people, and it's not a good source of information for people running clinical trials and even neurologists treating these patients. So if you can replace that by a little tool that is very user-friendly, that doesn't interfere much with the daily routine, that would be worn for a couple of months at a time, you could really get the type of data that allows an evidence-based approach to helping these people and build a solution that could help them.
So help the listeners understand, I know it's difficult to describe, but when you say a small device and you mm-hmm. talked about multiple parameters that are being recorded, is it all being recorded from that single device? What does that device look like? What's the sort of makeup of this? How do you action that for a patient?
Yeah, and so that's a very good question, and actually it touches on one of the main strengths of our platform, and that is that on one hand we have a basic of tools in place to very quickly generate a custom design, because we can grab what we've learned so far, we can grab all the hardware designs that we have, and we can modify the form factor slightly, which is not that hard to do, for instance, to something that looks more like a hearing aid and that fits behind the ears. So that's one aspect, which is what we've actually done here. Second is that because this builds onto the broader Byteflies platform, it is also compatible with the wider collection of sensors that we have. So in many cases, it could be interesting to also record respiration or electrocardiogram data. All you have to do is add one additional device that connects to the chest with a chest patch, and all that data syncs together, adding another level of information to the data that's being collected.
So to be clear, when you talk about those multiple physiological parameters, the one behind the ear is not recording all of those things. It's tied to other sensors that are essentially part of a matrix of sensors that you can apply in any instance. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, it's both. So behind the ears, for instance, we can record both EEG as well as PPG and activity in one device.
Yeah.
But if you would want to add more, like the example I was giving with respiration or EKG, then you would need to add another one. But we can really play around with the building blocks and repurpose them and put them together in different formats as we see fit for a specific application.
So it's a bit like Lego for wearables.
Kind of, yes.
Okay. So for those of you just joining, my name's Dr. Nick. I'm the incrementalist. And today I'm talking to Ben van den Driessche. He's the chief medical officer for Biteflies. We were just talking about the lot of devices that they were putting in and the implementation of the sensors around an epilepsy study. Can you share a little bit about the output from that? What's happened? What have you found out? What are the sort of the data points showing you in terms of that particular disease?
So really there we're now gearing up for much larger scale clinical trials. So what we've done is basically show that the data that we get from the device can be used by neurologists to annotate seizures and can be used to also develop more automated ways of getting to these seizures. So that's one aspect of where we are. But then, of course, another one, and that's an incredibly important one, is making sure that the device is something that people will want to use. Because if you have something that people will chuck in a drawer after a couple of days and don't want to wear because it's cumbersome or it interferes with their daily routine or anything like that, then you know you're back to square one. So that's another aspect that we put a lot of time and effort in, is to actually have people, both volunteers as well as people who actually have epilepsy, have been wearing mock-ups and have been providing us with feedback on how to make sure that the design is optimal, that they would be able to wear it 24/7 for, let's say, a few weeks to a few months without, as I mentioned, chucking it in a drawer. So that's where we are right now. That's what's been done. And then the next steps now is really larger scale clinical validation, because this is not a consumer device. This is very meant to be a medical device where we need to medically validate it and go through regulatory approval steps, of course.
So you talk about an acceptance. Were there any learning points in that whole experience? How did you get to the point of, you know, them not being discarded or rejected as a device from the patients?
Well, so one thing that is very important, that unfortunately there's still a stigma associated with epilepsy, and people are very reluctant to advertise in any way that they have it because of potential discriminatory reasons at work or in social life and everything associated with that. So it needs to be discreet. It needs to be something that is easy to hide or easy to explain. So that's why after a couple of iterations, we settled on this hearing aid-like form factor. Because, again, it's unfortunate that it is that way, but it is easier for somebody to say that they need a hearing aid than to say that I have this monitoring device because I have epilepsy. So those were definitely, that was definitely a very important piece of information to us.
Interesting. So as I listen to this, I certainly sort of, you know, I think about it in terms of, you know, upgraded physiological parameters, this sort of building blocks of input. But there's a part of me that says, well, how's this different to some of the other sensors out there? You know, we've got other players in the marketplace. How are you different? What's the secret sauce in Biteflies that says I should be using this from a clinical standpoint?
Yeah, I think the main thing is that if you look at some of the larger companies that are working in this space, most of them follow let's say a top-down approach, in that they tailor direct to consumers, which gives them massive scale almost immediately, right? Which is a good thing. But because of that, they're also restricted in terms of the accuracy of the data and the applicability of the data. If you take the example of the Apple Watch, it's a magnificent consumer device, and I'm sure that we've only begun to scratch the surface of what is possible from a more, let's say, wellness healthcare, but let's stick with wellness point of view. It has very broad appeal. It has a very large audience. But when you go to something that is an actual medical application where you have a very defined population of people that could be helped in a specific way, then that whole model kind of falls apart because you don't have the accuracy of the data. What Byflies does and some other medical device companies also do is it's a bit more of a bottom-up approach. It's more methodical. And because it's more methodical, it's more accurate. We really say, like, this is a very specific problem that we want to tackle. Now, the downside is that you move a little slower because you have to move through all of those steps, but you can create very direct benefit to a group of people. And one thing that's very important to mention there is that our ambition is very much to collect data at a massive scale. Because especially for chronic conditions, it is very important to have access to very large databases to better understand from both a personal point of view and a population point of view what some of the metrics are that we could use in the future to better guide and manage people's disease. But the one enormous benefit that we have there is that we collect the raw data. We collect all the raw waveform data. And we store that together with insights that we derive from it and other context information that's relevant, which means that the database you're creating is a very rich source of information to afterwards go back and mine again and maybe process again with new algorithms that have come out in the meantime and really build from there. Whereas if you start from more consumer level devices that only output already processed data, there's not so much you can do going back. And I've witnessed a couple of attempts, and it's a fairly well-known problem at that collecting massive amounts of data for the sake of collecting massive amounts of data doesn't lead very far often. There's a few exceptions, but in many cases, it's something that often leaves a lot to desire in terms of the insights that are derived from it and the applications that grew out of it.
So just to be sure, we're running out of time, but I want to make sure that I understand this correctly. When you talk about accuracy, it's not so much the accuracy of the rendition. Let's take blood pressure, for example, that you know it's accurate within plus or minus. What you're saying is that it's unprocessed data. I think that's a key asset here is that there's no post-processing that is then used and then you store whatever comes out. Is that true?
Yeah, so that's a very important aspect. So because it allows you, it also comes back to the machine learning problem. If you have a device that outputs a certain metric and let's say it uses a machine learning model to do so, then it can be very hard to gain traction with physicians to actually use that because to them it's a black box and they cannot verify the results in any way. If you store all the raw data, you can make it modular, you can make it something that where the mechanics behind it can be explained again if need be.
Interesting. So we've just got a couple of minutes left. Any sort of parting thoughts on where this is going? You've sort of set out a little bit of the future for Byflies. You know, obviously you're trying to be, I guess, the universal data collection point for physiological measurements in patients, you know, throughout. Where do you see your company and the solution going?
So I think, and to come back to the overall theme of your show, that the incremental part of it is really that we're coming to a point where consumer tech is merging with medical device tech. And what I mean by that is consumer tech, you know, it has many advantages. It's user-friendly. You can build apps on top of it that create direct value. Sometimes there's a coolness factor, let's say, associated with it, which can be very important to push adherence and make sure that people keep using it and want to use it. But to really that we're on the fringe of combining that progress that's being made in that field with what's happening in the medical device field that is obviously characterized by clinical accuracy and the fact that you can do evidence-based research on it. So really, the merging of those two is in my view, something where Byteflies is uniquely positioned to make that possible. And then in a final point that really touches upon what we were talking about machine learning, is that we need a couple of, let's say, common sense machine learning applications on medical data. And as I mentioned before, maybe we just need to stop using it machine learning and just an algorithm that is used for a specific purpose. But that will really be very important to drive adoption by physicians. And that in itself is absolutely needed to make these tools more widely applicable.
Fantastic. So unfortunately, we've run out of time. So it just remains for me to thank you for joining me on the show. It's been fascinating. Ben, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.